The following audiobooks contain AI-generated content and may contain errors. This audiobook narration presents The Negotiation Mindset, Essential Skills for Everyday Agreements. Topic Introduction. At 8:13 on a weekday morning, your phone lights up on a kitchen table. One tab holds a job offer, another holds a rent renewal, a third waits on a manager's reply about a deadline that has already slipped once. Nothing dramatic has happened, and yet the day has begun with choices that can change money, time, and peace of mind. This is what negotiation looks like most of the time. Not a courtroom showdown, not a sales duel, just a person, a decision, and a conversation that can shape what comes next. The same scene repeats in different rooms around the world. A tenant questions a service charge, a parent asks for a later pickup, a freelancer pushes back on extra work that never made it into the original scope. A job seeker reads a salary offer that sounds final but may still move. A project manager asks a vendor to explain a price that suddenly grew teeth. These people are not all the same, and their stakes are not the same, but the structure is familiar. Each one is trying to protect something valuable while keeping the relationship, the work, or the future intact. That is why negotiation matters so much, and why it is so easy to underestimate. You may think it belongs only to executives, lawyers, or people who enjoy confrontation. In reality, negotiation is one of the ordinary skills of adult life. It appears whenever two sides need to make a choice together and their first preferences do not match. It is the skill of shaping an agreement instead of simply receiving one. Once that becomes visible, you start to notice negotiations everywhere, including in places that once looked like mere logistics. The useful shift is simple, but it changes the whole field. A position is the stated demand, and interest is the reason beneath it. One person may ask for more money because of security. Another may ask for the same amount because of recognition or because rising costs leave no room for error. A refusal may be about budget, fairness, or timing, not hostility. The interest-based tradition, sharpened by Roger Fisher, William Urey, and Bruce Patton, teaches that the first words are rarely the whole story. The point is not to win a verbal contest. The point is to understand what the other side is trying to preserve. Before the conversation begins, another question waits in the background. If no agreement appears, what then? That fallback is your best alternative to a negotiated agreement. Often shortened to BATNA, it is the path outside the room, the option that keeps you from treating every offer as your only chance. When the fallback is weak or vague, pressure grows. When it is clear, the offer returns to its proper size. Closely related to that is the anchor, the first number or first frame that can quietly pull later judgment toward itself. A first offer, a first price, or a first deadline can shape the rest of the exchange before anyone notices it has happened. From there, the core questions become practical and human. What do you want? What does the other side want? What happens if no deal comes together? What is fixed and what can still move? Those questions are not reserved for formal bargaining. They matter in salary talks, household decisions, client calls, vendor agreements, promotion discussions, and service disputes. They matter whenever you have to ask, listen, compare, and decide. You do not need a dramatic personality to use them. You need preparation, patience, and the willingness to ask before assuming. This audiobook exists to make that process feel less mysterious. It begins with first principles, because beginners do not need theatrical tactics. They need clarity. They need to see how preparation lowers panic, how listening reveals the problem under the demand, how a clear fallback keeps hope from masquerading as leverage, and how different negotiation styles fit different situations. Sometimes the best move is collaborative, especially when the relationship matters and there is room to create value. Sometimes it is more guarded, especially when the terms are tight or the pressure is real. Often the right move is to adapt as the facts change. The skill is not becoming one kind of negotiator forever. The skill is learning what the moment requires. By the time chapter one begins, you will be able to hear a conversation differently. A number will no longer feel like just a number. A pause will feel like information. A polite phrase will no longer be mistaken for agreement. A hard offer will no longer look final simply because it arrived first. That change in perception is the real doorway into negotiation because it moves you from reacting to offers toward understanding how offers are built. And that is the promise of the book. Not that every conversation becomes easy, not that every request turns into yes, but that ordinary exchanges become legible. You begin to notice what is being asked, what is being protected, what is being traded, and where a better agreement might still live. Once those patterns come into focus, negotiation stops looking like a rare event. It starts looking like a practical way to move through life with more clarity, more steadiness, and less regret. End of introduction. Negotiation is one of the most ordinary skills in adult life, and that is exactly why so many people underestimate it. You use it when money is tight and when time is short. You use it when boundaries need to be set, when responsibility has to be shared, and when an opportunity needs shaping before someone else decides the terms. You negotiate over rent, chores, plans, fees, job offers, deadlines, and working relationships. Even a small agreement can become the template for the next one. None of that requires drama. It requires clarity. Beginners need that clarity now, not someday. Everyday outcomes often improve when you ask early and ask plainly, because vague requests invite vague answers. In email threads, online forms, and quick conversations, terms can look final when they are still open. A direct request gives the other side something real to answer. Early preparation also keeps emotion from doing the thinking for you. The point is not to turn you into a hard bargainer. It is to move you from reacting to offers toward shaping agreements. The interest-based tradition makes that shift easier to see. It draws a simple line between positions and interests. A position is the demand you hear, and interest is the reason behind it. Different positions can serve the same need. A request for a higher salary may reflect security, recognition, or room to grow. A refusal may protect budget, fairness, or timing. The goal is not to treat the first words as the whole story. It is to understand what those words are trying to protect. Before any real negotiation begins, ask three questions. What do you want? What does the other side want? And what happens if no agreement comes together? That last question matters because it defines your fallback. In negotiation language, that fallback is your BATNA, your best alternative to a negotiated agreement. If you cannot answer it, hope can start to look like leverage when it is only uncertainty. A weak fallback makes every offer feel urgent. A clear fallback keeps the offer in proportion. If you cannot answer those three questions, you may be in a conversation, but you are not yet fully prepared for a negotiation. Preparation is the first move because it gives your mind a job before pressure takes over. Define the issue in one plain sentence. Then state the goal you want to reach, the deadline that matters, and the decision maker whose yes or no actually closes the door. Deadlines are not just clocks. They tell you what power is real and what power is borrowed. A clear issue keeps the talk from drifting into side arguments. A real deadline makes the discussion sharper. And if you're talking to the wrong person, even a fair agreement can stall because that person may not be able to say yes. Sometimes the person in front of you is not the person who decides. A supervisor may need finance. A client contact may need procurement. A committee may need final sign-off. Formal authority and informal influence are rarely the same thing. If you do not map that chain, you may hear agreement in the room and still never see a result on paper. The person who can delay or block the deal often matters almost as much as the person who can approve it. Sometimes the fastest way forward is to learn who is missing from the conversation and prepare for the real gatekeepers. Once the issue is clear, separate must-haves from nice-to-haves and from the items you can trade. Must-haves are the terms without which the deal fails. Nice-to-haves improve the outcome, but they do not define it. Tradables are the pieces you can move if the other side moves on something more important to you. They often sit in places that cost you little but matter a great deal to the other side. That sorting does something useful. It stops you from treating every detail like a sacred principle. If everything is non-negotiable, nothing is. People often discover that what they thought was essential is really just familiar, and familiar is not the same as fixed. Facts come next. In salary talks, check market pay, and policy rules. In purchase or contract talks, compare prices, timelines, service term, and workload expectations. Facts do not guarantee agreement, but they keep you from arguing with the world as it actually works. They also help you see when the conversation is really about price, when it is about scope, and when it is about trust. The point is to know whether the number is the real issue or just the first thing on the table. A number, a policy, a deadline, or a term sheet can do quiet work that raw confidence never can. Success is bigger than money alone. A better agreement can pay in time, flexibility, scope, support, and relationship as well as cash. Time might mean a later deadline, fewer interruptions, or more room to do careful work. Flexibility might mean a different schedule or a more workable location. Scope might mean fewer responsibilities and a clearer lane. Support might mean training, tools, or backup. Relationship matters because the agreement does not end when the signature does. It begins to shape the work that follows. When you measure success in more than one currency, you stop accepting deals that look good on paper and feel bad in practice. You also get better at trading one kind of value for another. One of the most persistent beginner myths is that negotiation belongs to extroverts, executives, or high-stakes deals. It does not. Quiet people negotiate every day, and so do people who never call it negotiation at all. The parent who reschedules, the tenant who questions a fee, the employee who asks for a clearer role, and the buyer who pushes back on a quote are all doing the same basic work. The difference is not personality, it is preparation and willingness to ask. Extroversion can help with energy, but it does not replace structure. Volume can create heat, but it does not automatically create movement. A calm person with a clear plan often has more influence than a loud person with none. In ordinary life, the stakes are often small enough to ignore until they pile up. Rent gets split, chores get reassigned, a plan changes, or a service charge appears where no one expected it. These moments are easy to dismiss as logistics, but they are negotiation moments because interests differ and choices have to be made. One person wants fairness, another wants convenience, another wants speed. Shared space, repeated contact, and practical dependence all make the skill more important. If you treat the issue as a real conversation, instead of a complaint, you can often find a cleaner outcome with less resentment. A small conversation at the right moment can save a larger one later. The same pattern shows up in career conversations. A job offer may be missing training or flexibility. A salary offer may be only one piece of the larger package. A promotion request may depend on clearer expectations, not just more enthusiasm. A request for growth may be less about a title and more about support, scope, or a path to the next level. This is general information, not financial advice. Training and growth are often easier to discuss when you connect them to future performance. Beginners often think they need to wait until they are certain they deserve to ask. In practice, they need a clear case, a clear ask, and a clear sense of what happens if the answer is not what they hope. The person who knows what the role must become can negotiate more cleanly than the person who only knows that something should change. In business, the same discipline keeps small disagreements from turning into expensive ones. A client scope discussion can drift until the work is larger than the budget. A vendor quote can come back with terms that change the real price. A renewal conversation can hide risk inside the fine print. Those talks are not really about winning a verbal contest. They are about setting terms that match the value, the timing, and the risk each side is willing to carry. When you enter with no preparation, you react to the other side's frame. When you enter prepared, you can talk about scope, timeline, service, and price as parts of one whole. A good opening often begins with curiosity rather than demand. Before you state your request, ask in what matters hand on the other side or what would make the arrangement workable for them. That question does two things at once. It shows respect, and it gives you information about where the real trade-offs live. It also keeps you from pitching too soon before the other side has named the problem in its own terms. The point is not to surrender your case. The point is to learn enough to make your case in a way the other side can hear. Beginners often make three avoidable mistakes. They enter cold and hope their instincts will carry them. They accept the first number because saying yes feels easier than pausing, and they confuse politeness with agreement, as if a warm tone somehow means the terms have been accepted. Courtesy matters, but courtesy is not agreement. A smile can soften the exchange without changing the answer. A polite no can sound close to a warm maybe, so the only reliable cure is to ask and listen. If you do not state your view, the other side may assume silence means assent. If you do not check the other side's view, you may assume their courtesy means yes. Both mistakes cost time and leverage. A simple prep routine keeps the whole process human. Write one page before the conversation. Put your goal at the top. List your alternatives if the deal does not land. Add the questions you still need answered. Then mark your walkaway point so you know where your limits sit. The simple act of writing things down often reveals what matters most. That page is not a script to read aloud. It is a map that keeps you from drifting when the conversation gets noisy or emotional. It also reduces the temptation to improvise under pressure, which is where people make promises they later regret. The point of the page is not perfection. It is orientation. You negotiate better when you know your target and your fallback before you speak. When those two things are clear, you sound steadier, ask more cleanly, and resist pressure more effectively. Clarity does not guarantee yes, but it does keep you from mistaking confusion for progress. It lowers the emotional temperature and raises the quality of the choice. From there, the framework becomes more precise. Once the target and fallback are clear, the deeper question is what sits underneath the demand. A position is the stated term, and interest is the reason underneath it. A salary request may be about stability, learning, or recognition rather than only more money. In real talks, the recurring interests are pay, security, time, status, fairness, autonomy, and trust. That is why a useful question is simple and direct. What problem are you trying to solve with that request? The first demand is rarely the whole story. If you stop there, you may end up negotiating with only the surface. That distinction sits at the center of the interest-based approach popularized by Roger Fisher, William Urey, and Bruce Patton. It reframes negotiation as problem-solving, not as a test of will. The same interest can often be met in more than one way. A request for more pay might also be answered with time, scope, learning, or recognition. Once you hear the reason, instead of only the demand, the conversation opens. You move from arguing about who is more stubborn toward asking what would actually solve the problem. Your best alternative to a negotiated agreement, or BATNA, is the path you take if no agreement is reached. Your reservation point is the line where the deal stops being better than that fallback. Together, these ideas shape patience, confidence, and the choice to walk away. A strong BATNA does not guarantee a better deal, but it makes a worse deal easier to refuse. A job seeker comparing one offer with another interview, a freelancer comparing clients, or a tenant comparing housing options is really asking the same question. What happens if this conversation ends here? When you know your line, you can say yes with steadiness and no without panic. A BATNA has to be realistic, available, and comparable. Realistic means it is actually within reach. Available means it can happen on the timetable that matters. Comparable means you can weigh it against the offer without pretending that timing, risk, and value are the same. In remote work salary discussions, research has reported average gains of 18.83% for people who negotiate. That spread between employer budgets and individual outcomes is one reason the fallback matters. Before you accept, pause, and compare the offer with the alternative you truly have. The same logic defines the zone of possible agreement, the overlap between both sides' acceptable ranges. If one side will not go below a line and the other side will not go above a line, the overlap is where a deal can live. When there is no overlap, negotiation cannot manufacture reality. It can only reveal that the gap is still too wide. Sometimes the real work is not to force a yes, but to rework the package until there is room to agree. The clearer your limits are, the easier it becomes to see whether the talk is moving toward agreement or just moving. The first number effect, also called anchoring, explains why opening figures matter so much. The first number pulls later judgments toward itself, and the correction away from it is usually too small. That pattern shows up whether the number is a salary, a price, a deadline, or a scope limit. The opening figure is not the whole conversation, but it often becomes the starting map for everything that follows. When you have strong information and a clear range, making the first offer can help you frame the talk. When your information is weak, it is often better to ask more before you speak first. The goal is not to dominate the conversation. The goal is to keep it close to reality. If the first number is weak, do not answer too fast. Name the gap, ask for the basis, and move toward objective standards. You can say, "I hear the figure, but I do not yet understand the basis for it." Or, "That number seems far from what comparable work has been valued at. Can you walk me through how you arrived there?" A low salary offer, a high vendor quote, or a disputed bill can trigger the same response. You acknowledge the number without accepting its logic. If you react in haste, you let the other side set the frame before you test it. Objective standards are the quiet backbone of principled negotiation. They include market data, policy, precedent, expert standards, and fairness norms. In one published survey of planned merit increases released in December 2025, planned merit increases were 3.2% and total salary increases were 3.5% for 2026. Those figures do not decide every case, but they provide a shared reference point for the conversation. In compensation talks, a salary survey or an internal pay band gives you something stronger than a feeling. In a bill dispute, the contract text can do the same. In a vendor conversation, a comparable quote or an agreed scope can provide a similar anchor. Standards do not eliminate compromise, but they make compromise intelligible. Active listening helps you reach the interest underneath the position without turning the exchange into interrogation. Paraphrase the concern in your own words. ask one follow-up, and confirm the point you heard. You might say, so the main issue is timing, not price. Have I got that right? Or what problem are you trying to solve with that request? Listening is not waiting for your turn to speak. It is gathering information while keeping the conversation calm enough for more of it to surface. When the other side feels accurately heard, it often reveals more than it planned to say at the start. Body language can support that calm, but it cannot prove intent. Speech rhythm, posture, eye contact, and silence all carry meaning, yet none of them is a lie detector. A steady pace can help a firm point land, and a pause can give the other side room to think. The same gestures can mean different things in different settings, so treat signals as clues rather than verdicts. Keep bringing the interpretation back to what was said and to any evidence behind it. Do not build a conclusion from a single gesture. The interest-based approach Fisher, Urey, and Patton helped make. Durable also gives the structure that keeps hard talks from becoming personal battles. Separate people from the problem. Focus on interests instead of positions. Invent options for mutual gain. Insist on objective criteria. That method offers a map for beginners and a way to stay grounded for experienced negotiators. Concessions work best when they are deliberate, labeled, and reciprocal. If you move on one term, say so plainly and state what you need in return. A concession should never be invisible. When it disappears into the air, it teaches the other side to expect movement without trade. Smaller labeled steps can be especially useful when trust is still developing because they keep the exchange visible and make it easier to see whether the deal is actually moving toward balance. Reciprocity is not scorekeeping. It is symmetry. Negotiation is not a personality test. It is a context test. Collaborative negotiation looks for shared gain when the relationship matters and there is room to create value. Competitive negotiation protects your position when the terms are fixed, time is short, or the other side is pressing hard. Adaptive negotiation means you shift gears as the facts change. The skill is not choosing one style forever. The skill is choosing the style that fits this case. That flexibility prevents confusing warmth with weakness or toughness with wisdom. A competitive move in the wrong place can poison a relationship, and a collaborative move in the wrong place can surrender value. You can be collaborative about the problem and firm about the limit. You can seek a durable agreement and still know that a bad deal is worse than no deal. When the negotiation centers on interests, alternatives, and evidence, instinct matters less as the final judge. The deepest habit is simple. Ask what problem is being solved. Check what you can actually do if no agreement arrives. Test the number against evidence, policy, or precedent. Then trade deliberately instead of reacting under pressure. These same tools matter most when resistance, delay, and pressure enter the conversation because that is when you need them to hold up. That same framework still works when the other side is busy, emotional, or resistant. A difficult negotiator does not change the basics. It only adds pressure and noise. You need less speech, not more. Treat that as a test of method, not a test of character. Some hard patterns are familiar. People rush the exchange to steal your time. They stonewall until silence starts to feel like leverage. They stay vague so the real trade never surfaces. They apply pressure so your discomfort does the work for them. They frame the choice as all or nothing before the terms are clear. None of that is magic. They are attempts to make urgency look like substance. Slow the pace on purpose. Ask one clear question. Bring the talk back to the term, the timing, the scope, or the standard that still needs a decision. When emotions rise, acknowledge them without surrendering the point. Frustration, disappointment, and fear often come from uncertainty as much as from the facts. If you name the feeling and keep the decision in view, the conversation can cool without stalling out. People usually need to feel heard before they can hear a boundary. Hard-opening numbers deserve the same calm treatment. Label the gap plainly. Ask for the basis. Then move the discussion to objective standards such as market data, policy, precedent, or comparable work. A number is not persuasive just because it arrives first. It becomes persuasive only if it can be supported. When details disappear behind generalities, ask what problem the proposal solves and what trade-offs the other side can live with. That question does not give up your position. It makes the reasoning visible. If the other side goes silent or stays evasive, summarize what has already been said and ask for the next decision step. That keeps the conversation moving without forcing a premature yes. Silence can mean hesitation, not final refusal. A careful summary gives the other side a safe way to correct the record without losing face. Pressure is where your BOTNA, your best alternative to a negotiated agreement, matters most of all. Keep your fallback private but clear to yourself. You do not need to announce it. You need to know it well enough that fear does not decide for you. If the offer is worse than what you can do elsewhere, do not trade that away just to end the discomfort. A strong BATNA does not make you aggressive. It makes you harder to corner. When the conversation stalls, do not keep pressing the same point. Propose a short break, a smaller trial agreement, or a revised scope that both sides can test. If direct talks keep circling without progress, a neutral third party or the relevant formal process may be the cleaner path. Mediation is often reported to resolve about 70% of workplace disputes in organizations that use it. The same methods work at home. Rent, chores, travel plans, caregiving, and household budgets can all produce the same hard patterns, just with smaller numbers and more repetition. Shared space and repeated contact make the skill more important, not less. At work, the stakes may be higher, but the mechanics stay familiar. Deadlines, workload, shift swaps, remote work boundaries, and project coordination all need the same discipline. If the deadline is too tight, ask what can move. If the workload is too heavy, ask what resource or scope change would make the job workable. A clear answer on who does what, by when, and with what support helps prevent resentment from building under the schedule. Salary talks deserve a sequence, not a guess. Start by researching the range. Wait for the written offer, then discuss the full package. In Mercer's December 2025 compensation survey, United States employers planned merit increases of 3.2%. Total salary increases were 3.5% for 2026. Research on remote work negotiations reports average salary increases of 18.83% for people who actively negotiate. A March 2026 analysis of wage data from 2025 reported the United States gender wage gap at 18.6%. Those figures explain why a first offer deserves scrutiny. A written offer is more than base pay, bonus, equity, title, start date, training, flexibility, and remote options all change the real value of the deal. Promotion and internal move talks ask for more than a title. Ask about the new responsibilities, the authority to make decisions, the resources to do the work, and the timing of the next review. Without those pieces, a promotion can become a heavier job with no real leverage. An internal move works best when the role, the support, and the evaluation window all match the new expectations. In business conversations, the real terms are usually broader than the price. Client scope, vendor pricing, service levels, payment terms, delivery dates, and revisions all change what the deal actually costs. Bundle issues so you can trade across priorities instead of treating each term in isolation. Objective standards keep the package grounded in something both sides can inspect. Labor filings and court records from 2024 show why leverage matters when negotiation gets expensive. About 33,000 Boeing machinists went on strike for 7 weeks. Production stopped, and the stoppage was estimated to cost about $1 billion. The first contract offer called for a 25% pay increase over 4 years. The final agreement delivered a 38% pay increase over 4 years. That same year, courts blocked the JetBlue-Spirit merger and Kroger's $24.6 billion bid for Albertsons. In August 2024, a federal judge ruled that Google unlawfully maintained a search monopoly, and later orders required remedies affecting Android App Store access. The Paramount Skydance transaction shows the same pattern in a different setting. Large media deals can depend on financing, regulatory review, and the time it takes to close. Service disputes are smaller in scale, but they can feel just as sharp. Billing errors, delays, repairs, warranties, cancellations, and refunds all respond to the same demand for clarity. State the problem in plain language. Ask for the specific remedy. Compare the answer with the written promise or policy. The more concrete the record, the less room there is for vague assurances. When the conversation is cooperative, shift into a more collaborative mode. Bundle issues, trade across priorities, and compare the package against objective standards both sides can inspect. Collaboration is not softness. It is a disciplined way to make more than one term work at once. Sometimes a harder approach is the wiser one. Protect the bottom line. Keep your limit private. Avoid overcommitting early when the other side is pressing for a quick answer. A firm no is not a failure of courtesy. It is a choice to stop a bad deal from becoming a permanent one. Use firmness when the terms are fixed, the time is short, or the pressure is being used as a tactic. Style should fit the situation, not the personality. A good negotiator shifts between collaborative, competitive, and adaptive moves as the facts change. leverage, relationship, time pressure, and stakes all matter. If the issue is small and the relationship matters, stay open. If the offer is weak or the clock is tight, be more guarded about the terms. If the situation changes midway, change with it. Common mistakes are usually emotional, not technical. Overexplaining can sound like insecurity. Rescuing a bad deal teaches the other side to wait you out. Conceding only to end discomfort trades short-term relief for long-term regret. And if you treat your style as a personality trait, you stop adapting when the room changes. Negotiation rewards discipline more than identity. Closing well matters because vague endings invite future disputes. Recap the terms, confirm the next steps, and put the agreement in writing before the conversation fades. A one-page prep sheet keeps the issue, the goal, your fallback, your questions, and your limit in view. A BATNA check keeps the fallback honest. A listening checklist reminds you to paraphrase, ask, and confirm. A post-talk review shows you what changed and what still needs work. Practice first on low-stakes requests. Ask for a schedule change, question a fee, renegotiate a chore split, or test a shift swap. At low stakes, mistakes cost less, and the habit can settle in before the pressure rises. Then carry the same method into salary, career, and business conversations. When the pressure rises, the same habits keep the conversation grounded. This concludes the audiobook narration. Thank you for listening.